RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 57 with guest Susan Bradley, recorded Wednesday, May 7th, 2008. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
You're listening to Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my friend and co-host, Greg Hughes.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, sir. Having a good time. TechEd is upon us.
Yes.
Any day now, right?
Yep. I'll be seeing you there again. I'm looking forward to that. Meeting with a bunch of other people who I hear are attending. So don't forget, if you're there, come and see Richard and I and say hi or sit down or
we'll be there the IT week together for mostly right. At the TechEd online stage, which will be in the main hall. And I've been putting together some panel discussions, and one of them has really been a hot button issue, which is IPv6. We did a show a while ago with Sean Seiler on it. He got a lot of email around it. And definitely stirred up the pot. People are very interested in what's going on there. So I thought it'd be a great panel discussion too, to talk about more of it. So look for that at TechEd in June, second week of June.
Yeah, that'll be great. I know we got several emails, after that IPv6 show as well.
Right. Let me read this one from Russ Wilson. Hello, gentlemen. I am a .NET developer who listens to all the tech shows provided by Pwop Productions, and I've been listening to you guys since episode one. Like many other developers who have written into your show, I use RunAs as a way for me to stay abreast of new technologies coming out in the IT professional world while I'm busily coding away in the land of .NET. Thanks so much for your efforts. I just finished listening to your show we had with Sean Seiler on IPv6, and it was great. I want more. I've been trying to warn some people here at my company about the upcoming issues we may face when trying to migrate, or is that deploy, to IPv6, so I think I will have them start with this episode. I do, however, have a question that may concern many of us on a personal level. How are the ISPs planning to handle the IPv6 change? They have millions and millions of customers sitting out there with modems that may or may not support IPv6. Do you have any insight on how they plan to handle the deployment? Another concern I have aside from that is, even if the ISPs get their hardware switched over fine, what is the layman to do? My parents don't know the first thing about the router I installed for them 2 years ago. IPv4, IPv6, they don't care. They just want it to work. Is there a master plan to help with the non-technical people to get their home networks up and running? I wonder if the government will step in with commercials, etc., like they're doing with the switch to digital television here in the U.S. Your thoughts? Am I blowing this out of proportion? Anyway, those are some of my concerns I have as a geek and a consumer. Thanks for all the great work, and keep the shows coming. Thanks, Russ Wilson, Decatur, Illinois. Thanks, Russ.
Yeah, thanks, Russ. That's a great email. Some good questions.
Absolutely. And I think they're going to handle it pretty much like the digital TV thing. I would expect, although I don't know for sure, that ISPs already, you know, so many of the chipsets that are out there today for broadcast and so forth already support IPv4 and IPv6. It may just be a firmware upgrade.
I can see, though, I mean, one of the differences between, you know, an IPv6, two fundamental differences between the IP network going V4 to V6 and digital television. One of them is that the digital television is a switch, right?
Right.
It's a flip a switch, and we're no longer going to be broadcasting. So you could say that there's a transition period, and technically, I guess we're in a transition period right now.
Right.
It's not flipping a switch, you know, a black and white binary sort of process for IPv6. It's a migration. I know. So for example, I could sit here right now and let me look ipconfig. All right. So I have IPv6 addresses on my laptop here on my home network, as well as IPv4 addresses,
right,
because my router supports that. So I'm already doing IPv6, and not even on purpose, right? It just does it for me, but it has that capability. So like you say, a Broadcom chip or, you know, a lot of the others that are out there that are very common, you know, a flash firmware upgrade, or in some cases, just right out of the box, it already supports it.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be the same kind of issue. So the interoperability, I think, is a big thing. If I was an ISP, and I mean, there's two sides to this. One is your interior network, which is maybe IPv4. And I think Sean was encouraging you guys to start tinkering with IPv6. And your exterior network out to the internet, which is almost certainly IPv4 right now, and eventually will be IPv6.
Yeah, so in the case of mine, it is an IPv4 address that I get from my ISP. So, you know, we're that interoperability thing, and we're bridging an IPv6 network to an IPv4 internet right now.
So I could see ISPs, just for simplicity's sake, saying once they need to migrate their exterior networks to IPv6, creating bridging in their modems to IPv4 interior networks so that their customers never need to switch.
Sure. I mean, just like I mean, just like on my network here at my office, I am getting both types of IP addresses, V4 and V6, in, I think, a strong theory that, you know, ISPs can do the same thing for some period of time. And as soon as you start assigning IPv6 addresses to, devices that understand and will do that, it certainly frees up an awful lot of IPv4 address space at the same time.
But I would also point out, and I thought that was really the point of our show, was there are significant advantages to the IPv6 infrastructure from an IT perspective. It has
and a security perspective and absolutely. A whole bunch of different areas, yeah.
And so now that we can see that this migration is going to happen over the next few years, that we're committed to moving, it's a great time for IT pros to start looking at what would it take to migrate my infrastructure to IPv6 and what benefits am I going to get from this, from my network as a whole.
Oh, absolutely. If you are an IT pro and I think we said this during the show, but just to reiterate, I'll do my preachy thing here for a second. If you are an IT pro, or if you run an IT shop, or work in one, and you have not yet addressed the potential need for IPv6 and how it sort of fits into your plans, now is the time to do it. I mean, it's going to be less expensive and less hectic if you start thinking about it now.
All right, Greg, let's introduce our guest. Susan Bradley started her career in computing with the IBM 8088 and computers and compact luggable portables. To this day, she is convinced that her right arm is longer than her left arm because she lugged those dang luggables for an entire summit at an audit job.
True.
Awesome. Now she practically has an RJ45 connection growing out of her body. In addition to blogging at www.sbsdiva.com, great domain name, she writes articles for Brian Livingston's WindowsSecrets.com on the topic of patching. Extremely honored to be the author of the Small Biz chapter in the Windows 2008 Security Resource Kit. She's also the co-author of the upcoming SBS 2008 Unleashed. Welcome, Sue.
Welcome, and thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Is it Sue or Susan?
Yes. Sue, Susan, hey, you.
Any
Doesn't
of those.
Doesn't matter.
Any of those. So you, SBS, how did you end up here?
Once upon a time in a galaxy far, far away. Sorry, wrong story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Said the lady with the Yoda picture on her blog site.
So the once upon a time is I went to CPAs, geeks, bean counters. We have to go to technology conferences.
Right.
And one of the courses I went to in about 1998, I think, it was a course on small business networks. And at the time we were doing, I'm going to show my age, Lantastic's modem share.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Peer-to-peer network at its finest. And so I listened to a person talk about this new product coming out called Small Business Server. And I thought, you know, that really sounds like it's going to fit well for my firm. So then I went around to try to find somebody to install it. And they were all like, well, what's that? You know, this was when marketing wasn't quite as efficient, you know, as it is now.
Right.
So, long story, we finally did find somebody to install it. And then somehow, and to this day, I don't remember exactly how I found the news groups out there, but I was having some issues. I think I was trying to upgrade between SBS 4.0 and 4.5. And somehow, and I don't to this day know how I found them, but I found the news groups out there, the NNTP news groups. Now they're kind of going into web forums. But I found this group out there of crazy people just like me. Some of them were consultants that installed SBS. Some of them were administrators of SBS networks. And we all started to help each other through technology issues. And, you know, you start out in any of these kind of forums lurking a lot. You know, you kind of see what, you know, what the community is like and kind of, you know, see what's going on. And then finally you see some question out there, and usually it's the, you know, the really dumb questions, and you go, I know that one. I can answer that one. So you jump in and you start answering questions. And then, you know, this illness kicks in where you really start to like helping people. And in fact, what you find out is that when you help people, it actually trains you better. You learn when you help others.
You have to clarify your thoughts around a particular
thing. Exactly. I mean, it's that, you know, they always talk about teachers and how, you know, when you have to understand it better to turn around and talk to somebody else about it, you kind of go, oh, okay.
I think you also get a sense of ownership from that as well, is that once
exactly.
you start helping people on it, you really are committed
yep.
to it.
So that's kind of a long story of how I got here.
So for folks who don't know a lot about Small Business Server, let's sort of lay the foundation. What is the difference here? What's in it?
We always call it the kitchen sink server.
Right.
When you describe it to somebody, they go, you've got to be kidding. However, I'd like to point out, before I start talking about what's in the kitchen sink server, I'd like to point out to people that are doing virtualization these days, when they're doing multiple virtual servers on one piece of hardware,
right.
you're kind of doing the same kind of thing that we're doing in Small Business Server. What we do what Microsoft does, I should say, on the Small Business Server product, is they take and they look out at all the different server products that Microsoft produces, and they go, you know what, let's make it a little bit easier for somebody to deploy. So instead of the whole process that, you know, what I call big server land, you don't have to go through this process of DC promo, and you don't have to go through this process of installing Exchange and making sure you have Service Pack 1 because it won't install without Service Pack 1 on Windows 2008. It does the install for you. This is either, you either love it or you hate it. It's kind of like there's no in between.
Right.
You either like the fact that you get this wizard-driven install, so that things are done for you, and in about 2.5 hours, you have a fully deployed domain controller, Exchange server, SharePoint server. You have your domain name set up. You're connected out to the internet. You have a really cool remote access to that network. In fact, we joke about it now that TS Remote Apps is very, very close to it and probably stole a bit of Remote Web Workplace. You're either in that camp where you see the value of it and the power of it, or it drives you crazy because you're this control freak and you like to set up everything manually.
You want to tweak it your own way.
Exactly.
So you said domain controller, SharePoint, Exchange. Is SQL Server in there?
Okay, so let me tell you about the new thing coming out with SQL with SBS 2008 that's really cool about SQL Server. In the past, we were required to put the SQL Server on top of everything else. So yeah, we called it the kitchen sink server. In the 2008 era, they realized that we've got a lot of line of business applications that tend to not upgrade to the latest and greatest. Let's face it, they're, you know, a year, 3 years behind.
Right.
So
right.
What they're doing on the 2008 era product is they're allowing us to put the SQL Server on a separate box altogether.
Interesting.
So that's an option then?
It's called the premium. There's two SKUs. If you thought licensing was fun before, oh, you haven't seen it down here. We have a standard SKU that has the normal SQL 2005 Express. Then we have a premium SKU that has SQL Server 2008 standard. It will also give you downgrade rates to 2005.
Okay, and right. That's the one you can install on a separate box if you want.
Exactly. They also give you, this is brand new in the 2008 era, they give you an extra Windows 2008 license. So you can have that second server, you can have it do whatever you want. You want it to be an additional domain controller? No problem. You want it to be a line of business SQL server? No problem. If you add terminal server cowls, you can do TS app server out there. So that's a brand new thing that they're allowing us within the license to pull off the SQL and put it on a separate box. For those people that are a bit concerned that, gee, I want to put everything all on one box that are want to do that again. You can put the SQL back on the main box if you want. So there's no restriction as to where that SQL goes.
Okay. I mean, I guess I'm a big IT guy. I get chills at having that much stuff in one instance of Windows.
I know, but you have to keep in mind that number one, they've been working on this. As people say, it'd be insane for you to do it all by yourself.
Right.
We're not smart enough. But when you get the fact that it's, number one, supported, and you get the development team putting it all together and making it work, it does work.
So what are the restrictions to stuff like Exchange and SharePoint and so forth for the Small Business Edition? What makes it different?
It basically is the exact same thing as the Big Server LAN Exchange. The only difference is we're limited as to number of users or devices.
Okay.
There's a hard cap at 75 users or devices. What we say is there's usually, we call it the sweet spot. It really works the best when it's about 25 to 35 to 40 users or devices. You can top out at 75, but you're kind of hitting that top limit. In fact, there's a brand new product coming out called Essential Business Server. Again, the names are lovely. They don't exactly come up with a great marketing name sometimes. and that one called EBS goes between, it starts at 25 users or devices and goes up to a maximum of 300. Now, the difference between that one and Small Business Server is that one by design starts out at 3 servers.
Interesting.
Or 3 virtual servers. It can do virtual as well. So what it's done on that one is it's got a domain controller, it's got Exchange on a separate box, and then it's got that edge role for Exchange on a third box.
And that's up to 300 users. I just find it fascinating. Microsoft's starting to create these stratas of kind of configurations depending on the size of your organization. And
right.
I'm thinking about the challenges of the upgrade path from one to the next.
And they have already anticipated that and know that. We have what we call transition pack. And there's actually transition packs now. If you get to 74 and a half users on Small Business Server and you're going, uh-oh, we're in big trouble, there's something called a transition pack that you run on the box, and it basically takes all those limitations off.
Interesting. I'd like to point out that if I would be in trouble if I had a half user.
I know. Well, you know.
Yeah.
I think I've had half users on Exchange before.
Yeah. Well, you bring up an interesting point here, Greg. Of all of the products that Microsoft makes, not just a Small Business Server, but in general, Exchange is the one I fear the most.
That's the one that scares me. At the same time, I can't imagine Microsoft has had this, you know, SBS out for years now and gone through many iterations. While I've never used it in a production environment, I've installed it to play with it. I've always sort of had environments that were a little too large for SBS. I do know an awful lot of IT people that have used it and sort of built that single server and swear by it.
It does sound to me, Sue, that you have a loyal following. Like, there's a bunch of fans of SBS.
We have a gentleman in our SBS MVP ranks that also installs Macintoshes on an SMB network, an SBS network. And he equates that, you know, we're kind of like Apple fans. I mean, we will be honest and we will be, you know, critical, but if you believe, we believe. And one thing I do want to point out, when you talk about the single server solution, I wanted to dispel one myth there. I'm in my office, I actually have 3 servers.
Okay.
Right.
So just because it's all in one box for those roles, that doesn't mean that you can't have an additional domain controller out there.
Right.
That doesn't
you just
mean that
buy a license.
You, have, you know, member servers, you name it.
Sure.
Right.
How much for that sweet spot you said was around 25?
Usually about 20, 25, 30.
So what kind of gear are we talking about to run an SBS single server solution for 25?
It depends on, I mean, I am a hardware bigot when it comes to, I mean, I still am the SCSI gal, you know, and currently on the 2003 era, we were topped out at 4 gigs of RAM.
Right.
So we were in the 32-bit platform. So if you look at my box.
Sorry, so you're saying there was only a 32-bit version of SBS?
There was, in the 2003 era, because we're driven by exchange.
Right.
In SBS 2003, we were on the 32-bit platform.
Okay.
SBS 2008.
That world changes.
We're up on the 64-bit.
Right, because exchange is only 64-bit, so now we must go 64-bit.
You got it.
So that, yeah, that 4 gig limit has got to be the straining point of SBS up until now.
Yes and no. It just depends. It depends on your applications. For me in my office, trying to remember the model that I have. It's a Hewlett Packard. Most of the time, it's barely, you know, I always joke that it's sitting there in the corner filing its fingernails, you know, bored to tears because the CPU isn't doing that much.
Right.
I don't have any really SQL intensive applications. And that's what's nice about the 2008 era. If you really do have some line of business that's really a SQL hog, you can stick it over on the second box.
Easily spin SQL Server off and cut that load out. Because SQL Server can gobble up an entire machine if it thinks it needs to.
And to be fair, in my own box, because I know what instances are on there, I actually put in commands to what I call throttle it down.
Right.
Because I go, okay, you don't need that much. You're going to stay there. So I know what's on that box, and I've given cap limits for it.
So I got to think in a 32-bit world, you're mostly capping memory.
Yeah.
That would be the thing for me, would be to tell SQL Server, yeah, you only get a gig to play, and I'm sorry. And then,
exactly.
So the exchange has enough room to breathe and so on.
Yep.
So you've mentioned SQL Server 2008 a couple of times, and seems like we should be seeing something pretty soon, but what do you know about 2008, and what can you share in that area?
It's actually a community technology preview or whatever they call the betas these days.
Okay.
As people say, the server launch event that has the one product that hasn't yet been launched, word is that we're going to get the ability to have that SQL to be either the 2008 or the 2005.
Right.
So basically they're going to, and I can't give, there is a public beta at this time. There's a release candidate out for both SBS and EBS.
Okay.
As far as estimated days of when it's going to launch, can't tell you, don't know. But regardless, they're not going to wait until that SQL release date because they're going to give us the option of whatever we want
of
on that
either
SQL
way.
I guess that's
about to be part of the leaving that flexibility in there because we don't know exactly when SQL 2008 is going to.
And they've given it to us now in the current version. They understand that SQL and line of business applications, I mean, you can't, the vendors set their own timetables on that.
So. Right.
And the other cool thing is different again from the 2003 era product, the 2003 era product, they gave us SQL 2005 workgroup. And a lot of vendors kind of went, sorry, we're not going to support that.
Right.
So in the 2008 era, they're giving us the standard SKU.
Okay, so the other logical competitor, in my mind, for SBS has got to be the ISPs. I can get Exchange and SharePoint from a bunch of different vendors now. I'm just trying to feel what the advantage would be for running my own server.
Shared calendars. Paranoia. I kid you not.
Well, information security, certainly there's some arguments there.
I want my data. I want it on my premises. I don't trust the cloud.
Right.
You know, I think there are some businesses that are required to operate in that manner too. You know, from an IT control standpoint, having it in-house, it really can be a business requirement in some markets.
Well, I love this balancing act of I'm a control freak enough that I want to run my own server, but not enough that I want to install them my own way.
Exactly.
That's an interesting window to live in.
Well, it's sort of a business rules versus the technology rules as well. Sort of two different sets of rules there, where the technology people have to help enforce the business rule.
You have to remember too that there's a consulting group out here that installs most of the small business servers.
Right.
So the business owner comes in and says, "I need this. I'm not comfortable with the cloud yet. What options do you have?" And the consultant goes out there to Microsoft's, you know, laundry list of stuff, and they, you know, let's be fair, they also go out to Novell and Linux.
Right.
And they look at the options and say, okay, which one, you know, gives me what this client needs. The client doesn't care what name it is. The client does usually want Exchange. You know, we're married to Outlook, let's face it.
Yeah, it's not that they want Exchange, it's that they're married to Outlook. So they,
yep.
And the experience of Outlook is so much better once you have an Exchange server.
As right. We always joke, the what you sell to clients or what you show to clients, you don't show the clients the server at all. You know, that could be a brick in the corner for all they care. You show them two things. Number one is you show them the shared calendar feature ability in Outlook.
Right.
That's number one. And the second thing is you show them what we call the remote web workplace. What remote web workplace is a SSL website that the end user logs into, puts their username and password, and they literally get back to that their desktop back at the office.
Wow.
So there's what's nice about it, if you've got people that aren't on the uber geek, you know, remote worker side that can't handle the VPN and can't handle all this stuff, they literally get back to their same desktop at the office. So all, you know, if you've got these people that if you move the icons 2 inches, they freak.
Right.
They're getting back to their icons, their desktop, everything works.
So what about the sort of grubby underside of managing all of this? What about backup, disaster recovery, that kind of thing?
That's one nice thing. I mean, people give a bad time or they freak out about the quote-unquote single server solution.
Right.
But at the same time, it gives you a lot of flexibility because if you do choose to do a single domain controller, you can image that domain controller and not introduce risk back into the network when you restore that.
Because there is no other domain controller.
Exactly.
So you're willing, then you are dealing with downtime. But
usually, though, yes and no. Number one is you buy good hardware. That's my first rule of thumb.
Right.
You also buy, the second rule of thumb that I have is you buy a spare hard drive.
Sure.
Whatever, you always make sure that there's a hot swap available. Because you don't want to be calling, you know, Fry's at 10 o'clock at night going, do you have, you know, an HP, you know, hard drive?
Now, you're talking about a RAID 1 configuration, or are you talking about literally just having an extra hard drive on the shelf?
Just having an extra hard drive.
Okay.
This is the level of paranoia. Okay, so level of paranoia is having an extra hard drive at a minimum.
Right.
Next level of paranoia is having an extra NIC card, because I've sometimes had those go bad.
Mm-hmm.
Next level up of paranoia is if you get software assurance, you can have what's called a cold server standby right, where right. You have another piece of hardware out there.
That already has the software installed on it, but it's off.
It already has the software installed. Most people don't choose that. They rather would choose the image, making a drive image of it. Nowadays, too, the other way that they're getting around this is virtualization.
Right.
Because once you release that operating system from the physical box and you put it in a virtual, it doesn't care what hardware you have.
Yeah, easy to switch to a different machine.
I mean, we've literally had a consultant, a friend of mine in Australia, had one of their clients, the network, the server went down. He virtualized it on his laptop for the weekend. Kept them, you know, Band-Aid, obviously it wasn't the most greatest experience in the world, but kept them up and going.
At least they were running.
So they got new hardware and put it right back down.
So I just recall that the backup software that Microsoft provides is not that robust. What's doing the imaging?
We're using a couple of things. In the 2003 era right now, we're using either Acronis or StorageCraft.
Okay, so, I mean, these are a smart SBS owner goes out and buys Acronis. I buy that. I mean, I'm a big Acronis fan myself, but they make sense
good
to
software.
Me. To just the nice thing about having one machine is you can snap an image of it. I'll bet that's a pretty healthy size image, mind you.
It can be, yes. Now here, shall I throw out another way that we're doing it?
Sure.
You're going to love this. Windows Home Server.
What?
Really?
I kid you not. The uber geeks in the community are taking Home Server and using it as a backup. It backs up the SBS box. It backs up the client workstation.
That's hilarious. I love it.
It works.
I can put a plug in for Home Server. You know, mine is sitting right here next to me, and it's probably the best hardware technology investment I've made in many, many years, you know, for me. It really is pretty cool stuff.
Well, and I think those are the sort of the key things about being successful with this is what are the other third-party add-ons we've got to plug into it?
Exactly.
Is there others we should know about?
One of the things that I recommend for small business servers, especially in this day and age of spam, you know, we all love spam.
Right.
I recommend that you put what I call the cloud out front. So So if it's Postini, if it's Reflection, if it's Exchange Defender, you put some third-party hosted thing out front to filter the email first. And then the other thing that I do is I limit down my port 25 connections to just, in my case, it's Exchange Defender.
Right.
I limit port 25 to just look at Exchange Defender. So I'm not getting any drive-by anythings on that port at all.
Right. And so these are mail proxies, essentially, that all the mail goes through them.
They hold it. If I go down, they hold the email.
Right.
They filter it. They have an archive for 2 weeks of spam if I really wanted to go back and see spam. They're a proxy in front of me.
Right.
So that they get it first. They filter it. They hold it if I go down. You were saying about downtime too. That's probably the key. If you were in a small business network, you usually can afford some downtime.
Right.
You can go a Friday afternoon for 4 hours without the network.
Sure. But you don't want your mail to bounce. That's the thing. So having a mail proxy gets rid of the bouncing mail. What about the firewall? What am I don't imagine I'm plugging this internet connection directly into this box. Is there something I should be putting between them?
Depends on which era you were at. In the SBS 2003 era, they actually had, you ready for this? Not only did we have the domain controller and everything else on the box, we had ISIS server on the same box.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah, I know. We got a little bit smarter in the 2008 era. We're actually now, the ISIS server is no longer part of the product, so now we can purchase whatever firewall we want in front of it. In fact, they're going to what's called a single NIC setup.
Right.
Part of this is due to the technology change in Windows Server 2008.
Right.
Server 2008 is shipping with the firewall network on that NIC card, turned on 24/7. It's like Vista does it.
Right.
It's to better protect that network connection. As such, they can't do the ISIS server on top of the same box anymore, which is a good thing. It's time that we got it off the domain controller. So now we can choose whatever firewall device we want in front.
Okay. That makes sense to me.
Of course. ISIS server provides the ability. So is ISIS server needed, I guess, for this? You were talking earlier about the capability to sort of publish certain services out to end users. Maybe they're going to remote connect to their desktop or those sorts of things. Or is that something separate in SBS 2008?
What SBS does is it basically sets up the publishing, and then if it can see the firewall out there, if it can handle UPnP, it will actually poke the necessary holes in that outside firewall. If you have a firewall, or if you're paranoid and you turn off UPnP, you just manually go to that firewall and configure the 443 connection.
So that actually sounds really similar to the way the Windows Home Server does a very similar thing to allow you to remotely connect to that console.
You've got the same kind of routine. It's the same. The Home Server, Small Business Server, and Essential Business Server are all three out of the Windows Essential Systems Solutions family. I think I got that right.
Gotcha.
They're all three kissing cousins. And the funny thing is you kind of see parts of each of them and all three of them, because the remote capabilities in Windows Home Server first were in Small Business Server, then they were taken over to Essential Business Server. The dynamic IP that's in Windows Home Server is also in Small Business Server now. So they work together very well in realizing which parts of each were really good, and so they're stealing and cannibalizing parts.
A pretty good example, I think, of Microsoft not reinventing every wheel every time the last several years. It seems like they've really done a good job of trying to build common components, use the parts that work really well, across products.
Right. And for those people in the audience that have used Windows Home Server, the wizards that are in there, again, it's the same things are going on in Small Business Server 2008. That same ability where it walks you through of, we're going to do this and we're going to do that, same concept.
I'm kind of curious, for people that maybe are thinking about beefing up their services, I imagine, there's businesses, small and medium-sized businesses, that might be able to take advantage of this. But one of the big roadblocks sometimes is cost or perceived cost. What maybe some round numbers, and granted, you're not the cost or licensing person, but what's your experience with, you know, what kind of investment does it take to be able to implement an SBS set of services?
From a consultant standpoint or from a business standpoint?
Well, I think if you have a business standpoint, you know, maybe they're running, you know, a couple of different ad hoc services here and there to do mail and, you know, old calendaring legacy apps, and they'd like to become a little more modern. But what kind of investment, generally speaking, are they looking at from a licensing standpoint?
Amazingly enough, when you go out to Dell and some of the OEM websites, and to be honest with you, some of the hardware out there scares me a little bit, because to me, it's a little bit underpowered. But I mean, you can actually, I literally got a box just to see what it was like. I literally got a Small Business Server 2003 box for about $800 from an OEM site.
Wow. Hardware too.
I wouldn't recommend this box, to be honest with you, but it was like the I call it an overgrown desktop. So to me, I wouldn't recommend that level. I would be comfortable more with at least a $2,000 to $4,000 box.
That's for the hardware. Problem. How much is the licensing?
The licensing, the pricing on the 2003 model, and I don't know the 2008. So you're going to have to wait until that releases. On the 2003 side, the standard version was $599. Hopefully, I get this right. The premium version was, I think, $1,299. For the licensing, and that comes with 5 user cow, and then you can buy 5 cows or 20 cows, and I think the 5 packs, I think they're $99 a piece. And again,
so all in all, it's really not that expensive, really.
Yeah, I mean, what really costs for a lot of people is not the hardware and not the software; it's the consultant time
to get it running right.
Yep.
That seems reasonable. That's just work, understanding the business and how it needs to have things work.
Right. And, you know, it's coming in, and if they've got a peer-to-peer network, it's taking them and migrating them over to the server domain setup.
Right.
Sometimes, or I shouldn't say sometimes, a lot of times, it's coming into a small network, and they've got a lot of XP homes, and XP homes won't join a domain.
Right.
So you've got to upgrade them to XP Professional.
So it's most, I think most of the consulting work has got to be taking what's currently there and making it work in an SBS world.
Right.
That's got to be the definitely challenging part. You mentioned a couple of times the various vendors, third-party apps that people often run in this environment. Any favorites? Are we talking like Great Plains or some of the other Microsoft Dynamics products?
You know what? In my world, because I am a CPA, for whatever reason in California where I live, Great Plains hasn't made too much of inroads. We have QuickBooks.
Ah, so QuickBooks is the popular one.
QuickBooks is up on our servers. Not so much Great Plains. Sorry, Microsoft.
But I guess that's got to be a common install, and you need to work in a configuration, and QuickBooks does support SBS.
Yep. In fact, the funny thing is I know from reliable sources that because QuickBooks in the 2007 and 2008 era worked really well on a network setup. I heard through the grapevine that QuickBooks was actually pushing a lot of server deployments because they realized that they needed to have some kind of server in the middle to share that data out. So
it's
actually, you know, they'd buy QuickBooks and realize, oops, we need a server, and then they'd go buy Small Business Server.
Nice. Interesting synergy there.
Yep.
And I don't think QuickBooks utilizes SharePoint. What do people end up doing with SharePoint? Is it primarily just the office sharing kind of thing?
SharePoint's a funny thing. I think it's going to grow more. Right now, SharePoint is very much dependent on if there's somebody in the office that gets it or if the consultant gets it and pushes it out.
Right.
In my office, we've used it as both what I call an HR bulletin board. So we've got the firm policies and we've got the, you know, health documents up there and that kind of stuff. And then because we have a specialty called litigation consulting, I have some very unique documents up on SharePoint for that. So in my case, it was because I pushed it, I liked it. And in the 2008 era, we'll be getting SharePoint version 3. So we're going up to the one that ships with SBS 2003 right now is the V2. SharePoint V3 will be in Small Business Server 2008.
Okay. Susan, we've torn through a half an hour in record time, probably less than a half an hour flat, and I think we sort of got a picture of SBS. What are we missing here?
The main thing is if you come to my blog at sbsdiva.com, you'll see links there for the places that you can go to if you're interested in finding out more about this. They've just announced a release candidate zero of SBS and EBS, that's Small Business Server 2008, and Essential Business Server 2008. Both of them just opened up from the private betas to public betas now. So if you're more interested, come out to sbsdiva.com and I'll have links there where you can sign up for more information.
Great.
That's awesome.
Susan Bradley, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.